We are not heroes, nor are we villains, neither kings nor magicians, but we can tell you their stories. We are the Lore Keepers, and we welcome you to Halloween.
Welcome to Halume. This is Lore Keepers, the Boundless Venture, the world-renowned podcasting opus, wherein the richest tapestry of lore in human history is sung into being before your ear holes. I'm Carter.
That one got angry. I'm Frank.
Whether you melt jewelry in volcanoes, burn steel to usurp the Carrion Throne, or crit on your Grey Warden to floss, sit a while by our fire, ho ho ho, weary wanderer, and let us weave you a tale about Popats. This half fortnight, we're talking about some kind of leadership or office that is going to be the kind of position that governs. Are you ready for this? The island of Tenzatung or the city of Badassadi. But before we get into that, Frank, how you doing?
You know, they already know the name. Those names, we dropped them at the end of the last episode, right?
Of course. But where this is a reminder, Frank. They might have forgot. It's been a week.
Oh, boy. Carter, I don't know, man. I'm doing fine. Work is... It's like staring down the barrel of something big and nasty. It's coming. It's coming, and honestly, probably by the time this episode comes, I'm in it all the way.
Big, and it's gonna nasty, be... it's coming, and you're gonna be in it. All right, good to know.
Yeah. It's frustrating, though. No, it's definitely. I knew that this was whatever. It's not important. The important thing is, it's not. Today, and it's Sunday, and I don't have to think about it too much, aside from when I go get some work done on the Lord's Day.
Yeah.
I have a... Dude, I don't know how much you pay attention to PC parts, but obviously I have another... I have to drop more information. So this last week, they released... It was the release of the AMD Ryzen 5000 series...
Which is the CPU?
It's AMD's, like, it's AMD and Intel. AMD only has like 20% of market share. Intel's like 70 or something like that, 75. And then obviously the rest is just kind of split up between tiny guys. This is the first chipset where the claims were basically made that it could stand toe-to-toe with Intel on the gaming side, because what AMD has been good for is, like, everything else, basically. It's like if you want a one core that can just go faster than anything else, on it, or a chip that, you know, it when it's running at single core, it can go faster than anything else, you get Intel. And AMD, you'd get because you want to be able to do multiple things at once, or, you know, have multiple cores running. I got it. It was not easy. I got it. Well, I didn't get it necessarily yet. It's technically backordered on B&H Photo, so I have no idea if I'm actually going to get it, but I got an AMD Ryzen 7. It's an 8-core processor with 16 threads.
It's a lot of threads.
And the 5000 series, basically, instead of the two cores having separate caches of 16 megabytes each for four cores, they all share the same cache. It's not super important, but basically it stands toe-to-toe with like a $700 processor, and it was like $400.
Wow. Shit.
So yeah, pretty good. It literally like Bleeding Edge came out this week, and I was able to get one.
Yeah, shit, it's Bleeding Edge and it's only $400. That's crazy.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. Also, Still haven't been able to get an RTX 3070 or an RTX 3080, and I've decided that I'm just going to set up a bot to buy one, because I have been following two things of Link's Dude, like two different stock update Discord channels, and literally I'll get the notification, I'll click it, I'll click view availability and click add to cart and it's unavailable. They're going out that fast, and I think it's because everyone else is also using bots. So,
he's just, you know, just leveling the playing field.
Yeah, I mean, really, that's what it is. It's like, I'm not scalping them. I just want one. I just want one. It's been a like over a week of literally clicking every time that there's a link where I'm awake and I see it going off, and I've missed probably over 100 different opportunities to buy one because I just haven't been fast enough. I just don't think a human can go for. I'm guessing everyone else is also doing the same thing. So it's like, yeah, fighting fire with fire. Anyways, that's how my week's been going. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty well.
Good morning.
I'm enjoying the Return of the Mandalorian.
Yeah. Hey, check the Plex.
Yeah.
As of about an hour ago.
All right.
Or I guess you've been watching it already, so you don't need to worry about that.
Got it. And I've been slightly disappointed in that I thought Ruby was going to release a full season, but they've released a single episode.
They only release one episode at a time.
Yeah, that's a shame. And yeah. I can't even watch it.
I'll add it. Right. I'll add it today.
Thanks.
Actually, if you want, I can give you my Rooster Teeth first login stuff. I pay the subscription because I like some of their shows. I follow like Achievement Hunter and stuff.
I mean, if it's easier for you than doing the Plex, but you can just do the Plex and I can be patient.
It's actually, I think, easier. Because then I can add all of the episodes at once for the people who maybe pay attention but don't pay that close of attention.
I see.
But yeah.
Sure, we can talk about
it. So we'll do that.
Off the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll do that. Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, definitely getting opportunities to enjoy things that we like and, you know, waiting for them to come out. I think, speaking of release dates, also, as of this recording, Joe Biden is officially president-elect. Not officially, has been called by multiple like sources, the AP, for instance, like, you know, called the race and stuff like that. So
respectable news organizations.
Yeah. Like Fox News, who called Arizona like forever ago. Trump did not like that. We have no sponsors. I don't fucking care. I'm going to say it like. Good. Oh, geez, real hot and dangerous take I'm dropping here, you know. Oh, man, American public, I don't know if they can handle this fire.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just. It is frustrating how much this win feels like a loss. Like Pelosi was tweeting out like, oh, you know, we won the war. It's like. We haven't even like we barely scraped by the battle. This is basically nothing. I mean, if anything, it's just, I don't know. It's something, and I shouldn't like, you know, reduce it because it's significant, and I'm just, I think, relieved more than anything else. But like, motherfuckers got another 3 months in the White House.
Be a lame duck, yeah.
To be a lame duck, to be a sourpuss and an angry baby. And when Trump is in that mood, he gets pretty destructive. And I'm just like, is he just going to start doing shit out of spite? I don't know, man.
And he's already not. He's basically hasn't done anything to, you know, help the transition team or form anything like that. So this might be the most like tumultuous presidential transition of power ever.
I mean, Biden straight up said, he was like, yeah, we already started, like, a couple months ago, we already started drafting plans for, like, how to reverse literally everything that Trump has done within, like, almost immediately. Like, he's going to be start doing executive bills, like, within the first day or two of being in the White House, because he's just going to, like, reverse, like, returning to the Paris Climate Accords. Yeah. Returning into WHO. Remember when we left the WHO?
Well, I mean, you can't leave the WHO. You need to give it a year's...
Unless you're America. I thought America had a special exception.
No, so basically how it works is America has a special exception such that they can just choose to leave so long as they give a year's notice.
Oh, okay.
That was that gotcha. Is our special exception.
So stupid. It's so yeah. Why would you leave the WHO? I get it, like the whole argument of like, oh, you know, we're investing more money than other people.
You know that we voluntarily do that?
Yeah, that yes, exactly.
Just give them less money. That's a choice because the I think the amount of money we actually are required to give them is like half or like a third of what we currently pay.
Right.
Like, why leave? There's no point.
It's
they're so about stupid. To fucking get eradicate polio from the wild. Like, can we not support that?
Like, visiting literally every home in Africa.
Yeah. Well, it's actually...
Africa is so fucking big.
Polio is already eradicated from the wild in Africa.
Wait, really? Where do they have it left to do it?
I think like places in Asia, I think, still have polio.
Oh, okay.
Not sure.
It might be India.
I think, yeah, India, Southeast Asia.
Gotcha. Well, anyways, speaking of governmental positions or political positions of authority, this week, Carter, I think you kind of mentioned it. We're going to be talking about the mayoral or whatever office
gubernatorial.
Is being held. The gubernatorial. That word is always so silly to me. It makes me think of peanuts.
I know, because of goobers.
Yep, goobs, some goobies. We're talking about the office held by the person who runs the city of Parasari. And also then, as a result, the island of Tencetong. So, with that, first of all, do you think... Well, let's just start with this. Do you think it's a mayoral position, or like, is there a governor? Is there a separate governing position of the island of Tencetong that's separate from like the mayor, if there is a mayor or whoever? What do you think?
I think that whoever governs the city governs the island.
Okay.
Because the island isn't that big and the city is pretty damn big.
Yeah, you don't need two governors.
So
are they the governor? King? Queen?
I think it's elected.
You can still elect a king. I know it doesn't make a lot of sense, but you can still do it. Is it from a specific caste of people? Like, is it only like people who are part of like leaders of a guild or something that could be elected, or is it literally anyone?
I think it's in the quote unquote constitution of the city. It can be anyone, but it's like, practically speaking, certain wealthy persons or members of guilds or notable. Like,
yeah,
you're not gonna get Jerry.
That
down,
makes sense.
You know, down on Candlemaker Square to be fucking elected. No one's gonna vote for him.
Like, there might have been a time. Yeah, like there might have been a point in somebody's history where they had like an upset. You know, a revolutionary. Who is like, hey, we need to do things different. Hey, I'm Jerry. I'm from the docks. We gotta do things different. Vote for me. I'm Jerry.
I work for the bloody people. Not for no
guild.
Oh, he's
British now, too. Yeah, I mean, that probably has happened. I think it's happened at least once, maybe, yeah, probably twice. You know, I think governments need to be upset by people to be modernized. It's one of the few ways. Well, what is the quote? Something about like the most stable form of government is dictatorships regularly upset by revolutions or something.
Not sure.
I feel like you were the one who told me that.
No, that feels like,
I mean, I've heard that before. What
does not feel like something I would say.
I mean, it's a quote from a philosopher, I want to say. Probably. Like a political philosopher of some kind, like Locke or something.
Yeah, the most stable form of government is unstable or instability.
Well, I mean, there's definitely guys like something Johnson.
Something Johnson, the philosopher.
No, I'm actually thinking of a modern thinker who's a piece of shit, but...
No, I don't know what you're after, Frank. I can't help
you. Oi, what you after? What's all this, then? Vote for me! I work at the docks. I'm Jerry!
Jordan Peterson.
Okay. Yeah, he's like he's supposed to be like a modern Canadian luminary and stuff, but also he he's a professor who, do you know about him?
I do.
Do you? Yeah, I mean, he treats things that are speculation as foregone conclusion, and the way he writes is apparently just, I mean, not apparently, it just is this, where he just says this is the way things are. You know, talks about the sort of the role he's really here. Okay. So I listened to an episode of Behind the Bastards where they're like, you know, basically going over Jordan Peterson, kind of made me have misgivings about the monomyth and the hero's journey and stuff like that. And that I have taken for granted that it is this like entirely universal thing. But Joseph Campbell turned out to be like very into the Nazi party. I did not know this, like, really a pro-Nazi kind of guy. I mean, so was Young, but, like, also Young changed his mind. He's like, oh, shit, you know what? Actually, this stuff, not great. Not good, actually.
But, you know, once you're a coward-carrying member of the Nazi Party, it's hard to get out.
Well, I mean, I think it's one of those things where, like, for more it has to do with the ideology. Like, there's this associated ideology of Halcyon, like, human... you know, past empires or whatever, or the imagery of the hero which upsets the, you know, the current regime. And so that's the thing that Jordan Peterson is into, is basically saying that it is the role of the hero to basically upset the status quo and reestablish a new dominion. And then once that dominion has been built, it then becomes like intrinsic, it becomes like the role of a new hero to then upset that status quo when it no longer reflects the needs of the people.
Yeah.
And so
what I know about Jordan Peterson is that he believes we all have this desire, or all of our desires can be summed up in our desire to confront the dragon, slay the dragon, obtain the treasure, and return to civilization, mm-hmm. bearing the lessons we've learned and the treasure we've gotten.
Yeah. And like on its surface, okay. I mean, that I think there's some like that sounds like the hero's journey. That sounds like appealing. The further you get into the guy, first of all, he's way pro Trump. Like, you know, things like that, having also super anti-gay.
Yeah.
Believes anti-trans. That like part of, yeah, he's, yeah. He believes that, he was like quoted with basically saying something along the lines of like, yeah, part of the reason why we have all these men who are like, you know, killing, you know, like white men who are doing mass shootings and shit is because, you know, they don't have mates. And if they had a mate, they, you know, they wouldn't have that. Like, I think we should basically appoint women to be the, I'm not even really like paraphrasing Jesus. That much. He's like straight up. The sentiment of it was like, basically we need to be able to arrange marriages. In a perfect world, we could arrange marriages for these men, and then they wouldn't have, they could take out their anger, or they wouldn't be so angry, I guess. Cause that's how humans work. Anyways, Jordan Peterson for mayor of Patisari.
Yeah, you should send me some of that shit, because I think my one of my older brothers showed me Jordan Peterson a while back, mm-hmm. probably way before Trump,
mm-hmm.
and was like, look at this guy. This guy's interesting. I'm like, okay. Like, but I think it was before he got particularly radicalized.
Well, and I think on the surface, some of those thinkers can seem like, you know, oh, they're speaking to some inner truth about humanity. And this is like kind of what I was talking about. I don't know if it was last week or the week before, but, you know, part one, part two.
Yeah.
Where like that stuff is on some level appealing to me, because I like to believe that there's some inner truths about people. And that's why I have to be so careful with it, is that when you start talking about these things like they're foregone conclusions, like, well, everybody thinks this way. It's like, do they? Or is that just like you projecting your own insecurities and fears about the world onto everyone else, and also like having a very colonialist mindset about just like, oh, this is just what's normal for everyone to think this way? I would really like to know how far the hero's journey actually is represented in other cultures and things. I've seen that other people have done like newer representations of these things that are sort of like these universal truths about humanity. I still think there's a lot of credibility into it, because it does come from Jung's like sort of explorations into just how we interpret the anthropomorphic extraction of narrative from our biological experience. So like, you know, turning the idea of growing up into something that we just interpret. Rites of passage, for example, do exist in tons of cultures for, you know, men and women. But also, you know, I don't know, ideas, for instance, of gender normativity is not actually a thing that all cultures maintain. It's actually a more recent thing. But anyways, that's for a different time. Yeah, so yeah, anyways, I think that there's value to it. You just got to sift through it, separate the wheat from the chaff, you know?
Yeah, because I hadn't heard anything of this, what you're ascribing to Peterson prior. And I imagine that he's radicalized since, you know, because people have forced him to radicalize.
Because well, go ahead.
You know, and I mean, forced him in a weak sense, in that obviously they didn't put a gun to his head and say, believe these things. What I mean is that he became a controversial figure based on some things he said. And then because he was already a controversial figure, he kind of got probably lumped in with other controversial figures, maybe had some intellectual discourse with these other controversial figures, and then developed more and further controversial that were wrong. Obviously.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think there's probably some of that. I will say, from what I have, like, just from the biographies and stuff of, this Robert Evans is the guy who does Behind the Bastards. He does, a very good job of doing his research and checking sources, and he will constantly quote the sources and stuff. And one of the things that Jordan Peterson, it seemed like, was doing was just the person who was his mentor, who got him a professorship as a job, like basically completely changed his mind about Peterson as he like kind of saw more of who he was. And that, yeah, I'll just send you the episodes. You could listen to it. It's a two-parter. It's really good. Honestly, dude, I think you'd really like Behind the Bastards, because it gets into a lot of different, just like, hey, this thing's more fucked up than you think it is.
Yeah, recently.
Or what's going on with Facebook right now?
I recently learned about
Mark Wahlberg. And the fact that it's enabling coups and shit. What?
I recently learned about Mark Wahlberg. Do you know what he did when he was like 19?
No, what'd he do?
Oh, God. And when he was like 19 in Boston.
Did he beat up Corn Pop or whatever?
No, but something very similar, Frank. Unfortunately.
Really?
Yeah, he committed two hate crimes a year apart from each other. One of them, he was on a beach in Boston, and there was just like a class of black school children, and he ran at them with his friends and threw rocks at them and told them to run away and called them the N-word. And then he and his friends got a civil injunction, which basically means, this is a stern warning, if you do this again, you'll get jail time. And then a year later, like while stealing beer or something like this, he punched he assaulted two Vietnamese men, calling them, you know, by certain certain colorful language, and, you know, invoking their nationality, or at least their race, as what he's perceived them as a negative thing, and punched one of them in the eye, who was like an army veteran, and then like hit the other one in the head with a 5-foot stick.
What the fuck, dude? Yeah.
And he got jail time for that because he violated his civil injunction. And basically the like attorney general at the time, or what, like a big attorney in Boston at the time, was like, I only remember of one person from that year violating a civil injunction. It was Mark Wahlberg. And then like in 2016, he tried to get it wiped from his record, tried to get a pardon because of his humanitarian work. And one of the school children that like remember him throwing rocks at at her was like, yeah, he shouldn't get a pardon. This should remain on his record forever. Because him getting a pardon,
yeah, it should.
It would just invalidate all the work he's done, because it's basically the same.
I'm not really.
You have white privilege.
I'm not really a fan of pardons.
Yeah.
I think if anything, like, let that stand as being like, if you really did change as a person, then have that be something where it's like, yeah, this was who I was. And now I'm doing all this humanitarian work because I actually like. But I'm not going to pretend that I wasn't this person or whatever. Like, I think that is far more genuine. But also, I guess we don't really want genuineness when we're looking at the optics of, you know, celebrities and shit. So, yeah. You know, who knows? But yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I don't know. Like, I feel like there's a lot of that. Do you watch BoJack Horseman? I promise it's the last like tangent.
I have seen the first few seasons. I haven't seen the last few.
Okay. Do you know about the Forgivies?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. It's like a plot element, I think, in either season four, season five, or season six. I think it's maybe season six.
Yeah.
But basically it's like for men that have done shitty things, or like done the kind of shit that would show up on TMZ as being like super drunk and cussing somebody out or whatever. But like, you know, the nuclear option version of that, where yeah. It's like, I don't know, who's the guy who did Passion of the Christ and was like Gibson was being extremely anti-Semitic in the back of a cab or something when he was super drunk. He's talking about Jews.
Yeah.
It's like the kind of thing where it's like, how long until we can employ that person again, you know, until they've done their time. And so the whole joke is like the Forgivies happen every year, and it's like where the American public decides that they've forgiven somebody. It's very good satire. You should check it out. It's pretty funny. Because BoJack, I think, becomes like, you know, his whole he's the kind of person that you'd have a Forgivies for, or almost have a Forgivies for. But speaking of public figures, oh man, geez, we went places. Let's actually like focus in on this. Do you want to just call it a mayorship, or like, I don't know, are there other fun titles that we could use that would be more fantasy-esque?
There is a czar.
Because I do kind of like the idea of it being a what?
A czar.
All right, isn't that like level of emperor?
Yeah, in
it's
Russia.
A very small... Very small czarism. Very, very small kingdom. Empire.
It's like what they say in Fiddler on the Roof. It's like...
Oh, yeah, I always forget that that's the same thing. C-Z-A-R and T-S-A-R are the same word. Yeah. Czar. Czar.
What is it? I forget the quote. It's like, may God bless this meal and keep the czar away.
It's somebody asked the rabbi, is there a proper blessing for the czar? And the rabbi says, may the Lord bless the czar and keep him far away from us.
Yeah, there you go.
it's a good quote. Oh, we didn't even mention the reason why we decided to like get into this, because I think it's kind of a fun. So obviously, yeah. So we have a czar. We have a mayor. I mean, do we call him the czar?
I mean, he can be a mayor. It's fine.
Okay. Yeah, we have the mayor, or the ruler, the regent, the whatever. They run the city. I don't know. I mean, like, I have to assume that there's a council beneath them. Like, maybe the council of guilds, or is there a different power structure? Maybe it's not craftspeople. Like, what would be the kinds of people that you would need to hear... Or that the mayor would want to use to keep track of what's going on in the city. I think the mercantile people makes a lot of sense, but maybe do you also have a city council?
I think that let's say there is a council. That sounds good. And maybe
do you
the
have
council,
a dockmaster?
We have like a dockmaster in the council. We have maybe like, you know, some guild heads. Maybe we have the head of the archivists on the council.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm kind of imagining a primary and secondary council, like an upper and lower house, if you will.
Okay.
The upper house being people like, I don't know, like the, you know, somebody who's managing, I guess it wouldn't really be granaries, but like, you know, inflow of food, and do people have access, and are there, you know, is there a system of taxation where You know, I have to assume there's a system of taxation where the city gets a little bit of money and then can help provide for some people who are hungry, or, you know, some of these services that would be required. Maybe they take a small portion of people's, like a tithe of people's food, so that they can hand it out to others or something.
All right, so let's see. Okay. So the small council in Game of Thrones is composed of the Hand of the King, the Master of War, the Master of Coin, the Master of Whispers, the Master of Laws, the Master of Ships.
God, that is so Game of Thrones, man.
The Lord Commander of the Kingsguard, the Grand Maester, and that Dornish guy.
That Dornish guy?
Yeah, the representative from Dorne.
Okay, it's just everything that you said immediately triggered like the Brooklyn Nine-Nine like joke version of Game of Thrones. I don't know if you know about this, they have a joke version of Game of Thrones. And it just like just sounded like everything from that show, like the interplay between the Master of Coin and the Master of Ships and shit. Is there a Master of Horses as well, or is that under the Master of War? Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know what the equivalent of like transport, like the dockmaster would have a lot of, or whatever you'd call that position, the person who's like the shipyard. I mean, it's not even the docks district. The harbor master, I guess, is really what it would be.
Harbor master.
Yeah. The harbor master would have, I think, a lot of power because they would basically get to decide who docks where and shit. But you also, I mean, yeah, like you, I think you do have this lower house of like non-critical things. Like these aren't just like the core underpinnings. They're more like influence. Like, yeah, like a lore keeper would be on the lower in the lower house. I don't think you'd need a lore keeper in the upper house. There might be a couple of temple slash church slash chapel slash whatever you want to call it, you know, religious building.
Yeah.
Do you think that they have their own council or house or whatever? The House of Gods?
I don't think so. I don't think they have their own council. That's too
many.
Do
they have one representative or many? Like, that's kind of part of what I'm thinking is like, because there, I would imagine there might be multiple different.
There's a rotating clergy member.
There's like an elect. Maybe they elect one of their number to basically be a representative in the house, the lower house.
That sounds good.
Okay. All right. So yeah. So we've got this lower house. We've got different. I think that makes sense. Then you have the different guilds because they get to have their voices be heard. They each elect their own representative to be a part of the lower house. The upper house, I think, is maybe people that are elected by the mayor. Gets to choose who's like, or appointed. Yeah, sorry, appointed by the mayor. So yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be granaries, but like, how do you deal with starvation or like disasters? This is kind of what I'm thinking of. Like, that would be one of the big things that a mayor would be responsible for, I'd imagine, is disaster response, famine or monsoons. Like, I think it would have a wet and dry season, so like, you definitely would need to have considerations for the wet season.
Yeah, I'm sure that they have, you know, forces at their disposal. They could, you know, speak to the Master of Coin to procure extra shipments of food from the mainland, or they could speak to, you know, the guild, the wizard guild, the Wild, if you will, for, you know, protection from rain in certain areas or extra drainage from, you know, what have you, using magic.
Yeah, do you think that? Yeah, so you're thinking like there's a magician's guild?
I think so. If there's a guild for
what is the
else.
Yeah, no, I mean that totally. What is the role or presence of formalized magical education in Parisati? Like, do they have an academy, or is it like, I mean, even if it's not very a very renowned academy, or are they, is there maybe like a convocation or a different island nearby where a lot of like local presence, you know, you have a potentially powerful kid, they get sailed to this one island, where maybe that's all it is it's just a university, or academy for the entirety of the Convocation of Islands.
Let's do that. There's a university island that's, you know, not on Tenzatung, but it's important enough to have a seat on the Council of Pedasari. It's close enough and important enough that they get a voice.
Yeah, and I think it's probably to a government's credit, to an island's credit, if they have like magicians on their council.
Yeah.
Because that means that, yes, they are a powerful enough figure where they should have influence on what happens in the academy. And in turn, the academy provides like services for them.
Yeah, so I imagine that this is a ambassador rather than the leader of the academy.
Yeah, it's an ambassador for sure. And also, I mean, it's probably somebody who is also like a talent scout. The archdean.
That's the leader. The archdean, and this is the ambassador.
I like that. I think we can make that canon. That's fun. But yeah, I mean, I think that they take like a tithe of people and also are allowed to do like research projects and stuff. And that stuff gets approved by, you know, would they be part of the lower house or the upper house? I think they might be upper house. The wizards, the magicians.
I think they're upper house.
Because that's more of a macro scale level of like management. This was one of the things I was going to ask. Are they part of an assembly of other nations, like other islands? What do you call that when you have like a loose association that is only really comes that only comes together in times of war or whatever, like in a Sparta situation? No, but there's a specific word for it. I mean, I guess it's an alliance. Yeah, it's kind of the thing I was thinking of. I think there's a different word, but alliance works.
The one for Sparta, as you're saying, was the Delian League.
Okay.
It's a League of Nations.
Okay. I'm not really thinking of Sparta. What I'm thinking of is when you have that, like, the, you know, the Peloponnesian War, for example.
That was Sparta versus Athens.
Oh, so I guess it was Sparta. What about the Siege of Troy?
That was the Achaeans, this was like hundreds of years before.
Right.
The Achaeans versus...
I mean, that's Hellenism, yeah.
The Trojans. And that was just like, there's a high king of Greece, and there's a bunch of other kings. And when the high king says, we go to war, you go to war.
Oh, wait, so there was a high king who was over the other kings?
Yes, Agamemnon.
I didn't realize that. I mean, that sounds like an empire then.
Well, I mean, that's why the fucking... That's why... What's his name?
Achilles didn't just
fucking kill Agamemnon. Because he was...
I know nothing about the Odyssey and the Iliad. Sorry.
This is the Iliad, yeah.
No, I guess I was just saying, like, basically, what role do they have in sort of the greater government? What a job does the mayor play? You know, are they off island frequently to answer like calls to action or like needing to, you know, they probably have ambassadors. It's probably more just that they have representatives on other islands. Do other islands have representatives there?
Maybe.
You might have people present in your court. You know what? It probably is based on involvement. Like some of the islands. There might be a couple of other powerhouse islands, island city states that have enough influence where it's like, well, we can't not do trade with them or.
Yeah, I think access to the resources
or have peace treaties or whatever.
These would be in the lower court.
They're in the same places like guild members.
Mm-hmm.
I would just think it's a separate thing.
Yeah, it could be just ambassadorship.
It's not a formal. Yeah, it might not be a formal court. Situation and like you have these convocations that get called but only when there's reason for it, you know. Yeah. Like, oh, we're gonna go to war, or I want to go to war with this other person who would normally be part of the convocation, let's vote them all out or something.
Sure.
Or who's with me,
maybe coalition.
Coalition is I think the word I was looking for. Thank you. Yeah. Because, yeah, they aside from that, the responsibilities of the mayor, I think... I'm gonna shift the lens here for a second and just kind of address... I think there is something to be said that the role of the mayor, it is expected to be there the greatest servant of all. Because, like, obviously, ostensibly, you know, that's the theory behind a lot of different, perspectives on politics, or at least on their surface. But I think they really mean it here, because like their culture is so much geared towards providing for the outsider and, you know, having a culture of hospitality. And I think that there's something to be said that the mayorship maybe isn't that glamorous. I mean, it's very powerful, but I kind of wonder if maybe there's a trade-off where you actually are expected to do like almost like papal kinds of
get the Pope hat
roles where, well, yeah, maybe you wear a Pope hat. I think we give him a special hat. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
But also like, you know, like, I don't know, doing a lot for the impoverished or, you know, whatever. And that maybe it doesn't pay a lot. What is the motivation though? Like sort of what's the trade-off? How do you get somebody into this position of power and make it worth their while? If it's much more like servant focused than the average.
Maybe it's power games where it's like, you know, a lot of guild leaders will go for this so they can up the you know, their paid and exposure. They can up mm-hmm. the notoriety of their guild by having a mayor who's up with their guild and
yeah.
Then maybe that means they're getting the best contracts or, you know, whatever.
Maybe, okay, I'm not very good at political theory, so this might be a terrible idea. What if it doesn't have a lot of benefits at all? So anybody who desire it just for, like, the sake of power or whatever doesn't actually benefit from it, so you don't get a lot of people who are aspirational in the same way. You only get people who are truly thinking of the hearts of the people.
Well, I mean, if you have power, you're going to get people who want power, and they will use that power to benefit themselves.
True.
You know, because either it's powerful and people want it because of that, or it's not powerful and no one wants it because it's not powerful, and thus it's not important because it's not power.
Yeah, I mean, so that is the thing, is it's like any time that you have any position of power, a person who wants power for the sake of having power is going to seek it.
Yes.
Especially if it is the most powerful position in their region.
Yes.
That totally tracks.
You just need to actually...
Which is why I guess I'm wondering whether it's actually that powerful of a position is more what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Like, what are the executive powers of the mayor? Like, I've been learning a little bit about American government and, like, the different branches and the different powers that are assigned to them, what they can do. And I'm almost wondering if it's more like the judicial branch than the executive branch, where it's like, you have the power of arbitration, you can help decide things, but for the most part, you are simply monitoring the choices and votes of the upper and lower houses.
It may be easier to say what they can't do rather than what they can.
Okay, so what are some of the things that you think they can't
do? I don't think they legislate. I don't think they craft laws and enact them and vote for them.
I mean, do you think it's like an American thing where they can strike down laws by vetoing?
That might be interesting. It might be a classic, like, you can veto if there's a simple majority, you can veto, but if there's a super majority, you can't, or something like this.
Yeah. Yeah, if there's a super, you can't veto a law that has a super majority. Yeah. And so it's in the interest of the guild / councils to actually...
persuade.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much we're just replicating the American government system, which is
not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, very little to no executive action. I don't think
they have control of the borders.
I mean, are there a lot of checks and balances is maybe part of it, or checks that balance?
I think the most powerful
that's like
house...
the value of having power in the executive branch is like it's meant to be a check for... you know, yeah, like vetoing laws. They can't create their own laws, but they can say no to new laws from, yes. you know, from others. Or they can pardon people from, for instance, the judicial branch, like people who get convicted. You can get the presidential pardon.
Yeah, I think that...
like Roger Stone!
Yeah, good old Roger Stone. And they can give medals to people, like to that guy. Who is that guy who's got like cancer and has a podcast? What's his name? Rush Limbaugh.
I have no idea. Oh.
He has the highest medal a civilian can get, a presidential medal.
Is that why he's been in the news lately?
Yes. He has the Presidential Medal of Honor.
I have not heard great things about Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, I don't think
I don't even
has.
Know that much about the guy. I mean, honestly, that's part of it is I'm like, well, if he earned the Presidential Medal of Honor, that makes me pretty sus of him. Like, he's pretty sus.
Yeah.
Let's maybe look at it a different way. I don't know if you how much you know about political theory, but what would be some things worth drawing from other governmental structures that aren't like the American governmental structure? Like, obviously, we haven't even talked about federalism and the national versus like local branches of government. But like, what would be because I don't again, because I don't think we really need that for this island. That doesn't make a lot of sense. It's far too small for that. But like, what would be some of the things that would make sense to add? I don't really know how Parliament works, for instance. The House of Lords or anything.
I mean, the House of Lords is very dumb. House of Lords is hereditary and has very little power. The House of Commons has the power.
Okay, is that part of? Gotcha. Yeah, because that I do know that they had like obviously significant shifts to their constitution in the last couple hundred years.
Yeah. The House
I wasn't
of Lords
sure
is still hereditary.
How the House of Commons works or the House of Lords works, but
yeah. The House of Lords is most powerful as the Queen.
Okay. Well, that's funny because the Queen doesn't do a lot.
Exactly.
And lives tax free on her land.
Because it is her land. She owns basically all of Britain.
Pretty stupid. I know I have friends who I have a couple of like friends from England who have some stuff to say about
the Queen.
The situation of the House of Lords and the fact that it's like they should be paying like millions of pounds like every year for their in taxes and they just don't, like, in order to compensate for how much they haven't paid. But and that land could be used for other things and stuff.
Yep. Eat the rich, I guess.
Yeah, I'm down for it. Let's shift away from laws here. I mean, we are kind of getting long in the tooth a little bit with our time. We should probably start thinking about one-on-ones because we haven't even talked about sort of the number one position, co-position that I think alters all of the rest of this stuff. And was the initial like premise for why we even thought to do mayorship, the mayoral office in Parisari.
Yep. The official mayoral advisor.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Let's make a name for this golem thing.
Keeper of something.
How about
the archivist? Dog? Thog?
Yes, Thog. That is the name.
Like, that's the name of the golem?
Yeah.
Okay. Thog. Are they just called Thog?
Just
they don't have
Thog.
A specific title?
No, they're just Thog.
Okay.
The official title...
Maybe Thog is their name.
Yeah, the official title is, like, you know, the most... what is it? Something.
Grand poobah of this
exactly,
and that?
Exactly, the grand poobah of this and that. It's like some flowery title that no one really understands. And basically Thog just helps administrate.
Well, and that's the thing is Thog, I don't know if Thog actually has any. Thog is such a ridiculous name. I love it. It's so good.
I think Thog is.
Thog doesn't.
Probably has the most powerful position in everything. It's because they know how the. They probably like helped write the Constitution like 100 years ago or 200 years ago. And like they just understand.
Well, I think maybe
works.
Even longer than that.
Yeah.
Like, I think my vibe is that Thog comes from, you know, a previous Avum even, or like basically a previous iteration of the city. And it's sort of, you know, maybe they're known as the Living Compact or something, like the Living Constitution. The idea that Thog is. So, okay, we should probably step back and explain what Thog is.
Thog is a golden hour relic. That is basically a true AI, completely sentient, and just one day was awakened by, you know, treasure delvers. And then
I imagine they were an age of prosperity or something.
They were like, look, like, you know, Thog maybe is made out of like gold or like has a gold filter. So like, holy crap, we're going to make a lot of money here. And then they like, by like trying to move Thog around because they're very heavy. They probably just woke Thog, and Thog's like, oh, looks like I'm awake now, and then just like walked out and like walked up to the island.
Oh, sure. Like along the seabed. Yeah. I like that idea. Oh, that makes Thog a very like, yeah, maybe they can communicate through telepathy or something. So they can, you know, they just will just go down into the bars, you know, down in the submerged plane, you know, the peaks or something. Yeah. I don't know what we'd call that area. And like, we'll just like hang out with people and like just talk to them in their mind.
So then, yeah, a long age ago, Thog walked out of the sea onto the island. People are like, hello. Mm-hmm. Thog's like, well, so, I'm here to help.
Here's part of my thought. I think that the city has existed since before Thog awakened.
Yes.
However, this might have actually even been during like Eldian Imperio times, like during the collapse of the Elven Empire. I think at the time when Thog was uncovered, there was probably a lot of less delving because it wouldn't have taken much to uncover them. And also because, like, you know, how long is the history of artifact, like, uncovering? There maybe just was, like, some belief that there was artifacts down there, but either A, the technology didn't exist, or B, it was just too dangerous, or C, like, you know, everything in the world was going to shit, so why would you waste your time trying to collect treasure? Something like that. But I think Thog spent the first, like, you know, couple decades of their years just working on a crew somewhere. Like, I like the idea that they were just a sailor, just kind of, because what else are you gonna fucking do with somebody who just like shows up and they're like, I mean, golems are not unheard of, they're uncommon, and they're typically like the, you know, servants of wizards. But I also think that Thog might have been an entity that A, looks completely different than any other golem, and is effectively different, I think, than any other golem, because they have true sentience and awareness and stuff. But yeah, so, you know, kind of they have their Rumspringer, their Thogspringer, and then they come back, and eventually somebody, you know, I think maybe even centuries pass before, like, you know, they're noticed as being kind of a wizened figure who's been around for a while. It's like, wait, my grandpa told me stories of, like, you know, knowing a, you know, a metal man who seemed to do, you know, I don't know, who's really good at tying ship knots or something. What do you know about the past? And then they start asking him, and they discover that, you know, Thog has like a near perfect recall of events and things.
I think let's give Thog some agency, and, you know, maybe by talking with this guy, Thog's like, you know, this guy's like, maybe you could, you know, you could really help out here. People could use someone like you to tell them what to do. And then Thog's like, mm-hmm, all right.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think that Thog is a servant. I think Thog has their own free will and stuff.
Yeah,
it's,
I know.
Just,
and
it's like,
and then Thog's like, okay. And then maybe Thog ran for mayor, got it, and then was mayor for, like, you know, 50 years or something. And people are like, maybe we should have someone else instead of Thog. And then,
or,
and then they tried it, maybe, and it just, like, didn't work. And they're like, okay, well, Thog needs to be involved somehow, so let's make Thog, like, a special position.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, Thog just helps the mayor.
I think that Thog maybe actually did run the city for, like, a couple hundred years or something, and had a mayorship that lasted a long-ass time, and grew tired of it. And was like, you know what? I'd rather be consultant. I kind of want to retire from this position. And I'm imagining that, like, their later history is that Thog spends most of their time just kind of doing what Thog wants to do. Probably has a lot of different research projects, spends time interacting with the lore keepers. Occasionally will decide that they need to leave the island for a time because, like, there's something that's more pressing. Like, they might go visit the island of magicians, yeah, and, like, keep track of something because they're thinking on grander scales, right? But they still feel a sense of duty and responsibility to the city because, you know, hey, it was literally their city that they ran for a while. And I think that they hold this position of, they might not even have a formal position. Thog is just Thog. Like,
Thog can just walk into the, you know, the High Council and sit down. Like, there's a seat for Thog.
Yeah, exactly. They could just choose to visit and take part whenever they want. And maybe, I'm guessing, even when they don't, they also probably still know what happened, like, just from informants or whatever. Not on even any level secret. They just there will oftentimes be somebody who's recording on behalf of Thog, somebody who...
The Hand of Thog.
So, the Hand of Thog. Somebody that I could totally also imagine, like, the interview process. I bet that's actually, like, a high position to be basically somebody who's part of the cabinet. Well, it wouldn't really be cabinet. I don't know what you'd call that position, but somebody who is a Thog recorder.
Yeah, whose job is just when Thog goes away, you tell Thog what happened.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And help organize Thog's notes and stuff. Because there's probably a lot of cross-referencing that they do, too. You know, they seem to be the kind of figure who is observant. Their whole thing is to record, you know. And again, yeah, I do think that they have agency. I don't think they're just like the Watchers, but they don't necessarily publish or share a lot of the information that they have. I don't think that they're stingy with it. They don't see a need for the most part.
Yeah.
This doesn't concern you. Your life is, you know, enjoy your life. You've got 80 years left, you know. Don't waste it on this stuff. This stuff won't be a problem for literally 4,000 years. So, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, Thog's plan, you know, hyper chess in four dimensions through time.
Well, yeah, I mean, part of that is, do you think it's a situation where Thog doesn't really care about things that happen in the day-to-day, or maybe they don't have a sense of time? Maybe everything matters kind of all at the same. Like, everything is equally significant. And so, like, they are just as concerned about a thunderstorm that's going to show up in 22 years as they are with, yeah, with things that are happening 150 years ago or 2,000 years ago.
I think there's some of that, but I think that there is some urgency in some sense with some things.
Like, they're maybe not completely out of time?
Yeah, they're not completely out of time. But they tend to get lost in time a little bit.
Yeah, I think having a near perfect recall, the present is only a mote in a sea of like archived memory that they can revisit at any moment. And so it's like the past feels just as real to their senses as the present, or only marginally less so. And because the present only exists for a sliver of time versus like the past and the speculated future are much, much more like, you know, visceral to them. I think, yeah, that plays with their sense of awareness and urgency. But I think that Thog pulls through. Like, I think that they're a good person to have on the mayorship, like, yeah. to consult. And I think there is any mayor who wants to push against the acts of Thog. Maybe this is the check that balances. Is that the mayor, yes, might be power hungry, but if either A, they don't listen to what Thog says, that is seen as a sign of disapproval by both houses and also the people. And also, even worse, if they get the disapproval of Thog, not even like Thog saying we need to kick this person out, but like just I don't like them, that's like, I think seeing it, Thog seen sort of as like, yeah, like the living embodiment of their government, of their city's like political presence, and so if it's saying literally like the system itself disapproves of you, you know, maybe they don't get straight up impeached, but like there's like a definitely a level of like we're reducing your power, or we're not even going to listen to you. Yeah, we've been going for like an hour. I think we should probably stop.
All right, one on one, or are we done?
We can do a one on one.
To just quickly nip this in the bud, I think Thog does not have memory of anything past when he woke.
Yes.
Or when they woke.
I totally forgot that that was something I wanted to talk about. But yeah, like I have to assume that like he has no memory of the golden hour.
Yeah.
Maybe that has part of what they're trying to do is reacquire some memories, and there might be, I mean, maybe they're literally looking for specific glim discs or something like maybe. That well, actually that wouldn't be glim discs, that would be because glim discs are Dingir. Maybe there's some, if they have some interaction, maybe if Thog has some interaction with artifacts, they can glean certain things, like reconstruct the past. It's almost like psychohistory, but Is that psychohistory? What am I thinking of when you can touch an object to know its past or what it's been doing?
The Force.
There's a word for it. I don't remember what it is. But I don't think it's that. I think it's just that by observing it and like they're slowly assembling a picture of, oh, this is the time that I came from. And this is what like my role is or whatever. There's a greater capital S story going on. I think that they definitely, I mean, hell, maybe Thog even started the Lore Keepers.
Maybe.
Yeah. No, I think definitely, though, doesn't necessarily know anything about the Golden Hour.
You have one?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think we'll need to come back to government at some point because I actually was really enjoying sort of building out the different houses and the guilds that were within them, the presence of the harbor master, etc. You know, obviously, like logging would be a concern. You've got the foreign like ambassadorships and stuff. I think the one that I would like to see is what is the role of the people? I don't know if we have a true democracy. But I think it's impossible to ignore the role of the people. And I think it's that the society is probably stratified.
Just a little bit.
I don't know. It's not perfect, I'm sure, but I'd like it to not be awful. I'd like to have to see that the people have some power or representation. And I'd like to see how we do that. Maybe there are maybe there are district leaders or something. There's, you know, for each of the districts, there is a trio or something of individuals whose jobs are to basically represent the people and even cite individuals' concerns. Or like, I've had a lot of people talk to me about the smell coming out of the no more rotting fish on the docks, please. Please throw that shit away. We have processes for this. It's making their kids sick. That kind of thing.
What are these people called? They're like magistrates, but there's like a popular tribunal where you get like juries, and I'm looking at the democracy of Athens. There's this big whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, like they're a representative. They're the equivalent of like the House of Reps for America, but like on a much, much more small scale.
Yeah.
Neighborhood. Maybe they're just called neighbors.
Here.
Speak to the district neighbor. Or something.
Here, Frank, I linked.
Now that gets confusing.
So there's a lot of shit going on here.
Whoa. Whoa. What is. Ooh. Hello. I'm all about those crazy graphs.
Yeah, so basically, in the center, you have the population of Attica. And of that, there are the Athenians, people who live in the city. And of that, there are the citizens, which are free men of 20 years old and over. Which doesn't include the women, of course.
No, of course not. Well, and also, don't they need to own land? Or is it just all free men?
I think it's all free men of 20 years old. 20 years old and over. And so anyone who's in that category can submit a decree or law proposal before the committees of the council, which are 10 bulatai. And the bulatai are 500 citizens, 50 per tribe, and there's like 10 different tribes. There's like one for like, there's like Greater Attica, then there's like a different districts of Athens that are each get a representative.
What's the Ecclesiastes, the popular assembly?
So this is basically, I believe the Ecclesiastes are, I think it's just anyone considered the Ecclesiastes.
Well, that says that there's only about 6,000 citizens, which does not include the 30 to 60,000.
Yeah, but the 30 to 60,000, look, it can say, can sit, speak, vote, and propose a counter-proposition in the Ecclesia. So I think it's just, there are some people that always go to the Ecclesia. And it's typically, you know, approximately 6,000. But anyone who is a citizen can sit, speak, vote, and propose counter-propositions.
I mean, maybe they're Reeves or something? I don't know. Well, Reeves are like lawkeepers.
Yeah, the
it's where the sheriff comes from.
You're thinking
from,
of like civil Reeve. Magistrates.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not real like I'm. I here representative. I'm looking up Horace. Commissioners, delegates. Delegate would be a pretty good word for that.
Yeah,
I'd use or proxy, I guess. Honestly, I think delegate might be the best word for this. Because their whole thing is they're delegated, you know, or they're, I'm probably misusing that word, but, you know, it's, if they're a representative, a delegate is like a political representative.
That's interesting. So archons, which are a special kind of civil magistrate, retire and take a seat when they retire in the ancient tribunal of the Areopagus, which judge homicides.
Areopagus?
Isn't it Areopagus?
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's cool.
This is really cool. I need to look at this. But yeah, I think because we gotta call it, man. Yeah. I gotta edit one of these. But yeah, I think that pretty much covers it. I think delegates, I do delegate, or we could do a different word for delegate. We can come up with that later too, though.
Yeah, so take us out, Frank.
All right. Well, thanks for letting us be your escape from the world as it currently stands. And if you did actually forget your worries and you want to make others forgetful as well, we are on every podcasting service known to humankind. So don't be greedy. Don't be greedy. Share us with your friends.
Did we discuss something that was confusing as hell? Of course we did. But chances are that there's some context in the podcast description. So go there. You can also explore the subreddit or reach us at the Lore Keepers on Twitter or email us at lorekeeperspodcast@gmail.com for questions or things you'd like to hear in future episodes.
I just wanted to note we considered doing an email about something from Orun. Robinson, we are not ignoring you. It's a very good question. We'd like to explore it, but we started a new season and we're very into Parasari at the moment. We will come back and we'll do it though, I promise. Until then, how about we all give a nod towards Mr. Josh Silker for his composition of Land of Heroes, the Lore Keeper's theme. No, I'm not doing it this week.
Until next time, Frank, don't forget, there are always more thogs to thog.
Carter, that's so bad.
You want to try your hand? All right,
bye, everyone. I do every other week.
See ya.
Bye. You ever done river dancing?
River dancing?
Yeah, I feel like that's the kind of thing I'd know you to do.
No, I have done swing.
Yeah?
Yeah, I've done swing dancing. I've done your classic 8-count swing, 6-count swing, and then a more modern kind of swing called Balboa.
Balboa?
Yes.
Like Rocky Balboa?
It came out of a town in California called Balboa.
Ah.
Basically, Balboa came about because of a lack of space. Because, you know, swing requires a lot of room.
It does. And not a lot of space in Balboa, in California, huh?
Yeah, just, you know, dance studios or dance, you know, places where people dance. Ballrooms, I guess, I don't know.
Dance halls, dance studios, dance libraries.
They got smaller.
Dance parlors.
As we went into the modern age.
Oh, okay, that actually makes sense. Space actually would cost more in California.
And because of this, Balboa is much closer.
Okay.
And it covers less distance.
More sultry.
Mm-hmm. It's more like tango in that regard.
Is it actually? Because I know, I mean, like, there's definitely, it's interesting, there's a lot of, like, sister styles in, there's, like, tango, flamenco, swing, and a couple others in terms of the way that you move your body. Like, the tempo is different and stuff, but they all kind of came from the same. Am I talking out my ass here? I feel like I've heard that.
All I can tell you is,
I mean, all of it kind of came out of the same movements that brought about jazz.
Tango, what I mean by it's like tango in that regard is that tango is very close. You're very close with your partner. In Balboa, so in regular, like 8-count swing, there's probably at least 6 inches between you and your partner.
Oh, wow. And it still works out?
Yeah.
In Balboa, you are touching your partner. Like, you are hip to hip. There is no room. Your foot, a lot of the times, is in between their feet.
Wow, that does not sound easy.
I think it's, it works out, because, you know, as long as your partner's moving, at the same time you're moving, you're not going to trip over each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, that, okay, yeah, I mean, it's not like dance styles like that don't exist, it's just that they're definitely, I don't know, they're just doing a different thing. I think it's cool.
Yeah, so I have done...
I don't really have anything special to say.
So you are correct, Frank. I have done some formal dancing.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, I haven't done, like, waltzes or anything like that. My whole thing with dancing is, like, I like dancing. I think it's fun. It's a, mm-hmm. it's a cool thing to be, you know, it's a cool skill to be able to pull out it whenever you have that opportunity, which is very rare.
Well, it depends on who you are. I know some people who dance every weekend. And yeah, multiple times a week, you know?
You can go out for it.
It depends. Yeah, it totally depends on the person.
I never enjoyed freestyle dancing. I always prefer something with a little more structure.
Okay. So I always wanted to learn more freestyle stuff. Like, are you kind of saying, like, modern movement?
I'm saying, like, you go to, like, a club and you just fucking, like, grind or, like, throw your hands up in the air and move your hips around. Like, I'm like, no, I'm not interested in that.
I've just always wanted to learn how to do, like, real versions of that. So, like, for instance...
Well, you see what I mean? Exactly what you said. Real versions of that. Like, there's some sort of formalized structure such that you learn to do something.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what I mean is like specific moves like SpongeBob or, I don't know, popping and locking, you know, even the robot, but like crumping or whatever it is. Like, I've always wanted to learn how to do those because I have a lot of energy, but not a lot of control when I dance. And so it ends up being like the energy's there, the excitement's there, but the moves are not there. And so... I don't know, like, yeah, popping, or what, I don't know what it's called, but it's, like, typically you see it at, like, electronic festivals or whatever, where people are, their feet are going like crazy, but they're not actually moving from the place that they're standing on. Like, it sort of looks like they're running in place or that kind of thing. There's a specific style that's called, and I think it's so fucking cool that, like, it looks like a, you know, it fucks with my brain to watch, because it doesn't look like their feet are actually... Like, they shouldn't be able to do what they're doing on the ground, but...
Magic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's magic. But, yeah, no, I've just never gone out... I've never gone out of my way to actually, like, you know, take any classes or whatever.
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean, is that... You don't have to do something that's, you know, from 100 fucking years ago and call that formal. I just mean, like, a formalized dancing such that you learn from classes, from experts... in dancing, dancers, mm-hmm. if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can perform some sort of formalized move set that is mm-hmm. displays your skill at dancing.
Yeah, like, I've never minded grinding that much, but it's just not... Yeah, like, it's just not that engaging to me.
Exactly.
When I'm out, like, it's usually for when I'm very drunk and hanging out with all my friends and we're just dancing in a circle and occasionally, like, somebody will start grinding or whatever. Like, there's not a lot of, it's just for fucking around.
Exactly. It's just like, you know, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, if you can actually dance, that's cool.
It's a great, it's definitely an attractor. Like, it's a, you know, people who can dance, dude. I mean, they're attractive to me and they're attractive to other people too. I don't know what it is. I mean, I don't know if it's like singing or playing an instrument that it's just like kind of built into our, and maybe this isn't everybody. Maybe, you know, I shouldn't speak like I'm speaking for the entire human race, but I definitely know that for me personally, I'm like, anybody who can dance, I'm like, damn, I like the way you move, you control your body well, and you know how to present it, and there's something very attractive about that to me.
I am always attracted to, not I wouldn't say every kind of skillful activity, But when someone displays a skillful activity that obviously took them a long time to learn, you know, required some sort of patience and all this different stuff to gain, it's like, wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, I think that that's definitely a part of it. I think that, because yeah, when I watch, even when I'm watching, like, for instance, there's a streamer I watch occasionally who plays Titanfall, and just the fact that he's so good at the game is like, which is because it's a skill that I'm on some level aware of because of my own experiences playing the game. I have a context for like what he's doing. It's just like, damn, how the fuck did you do that? And there is like a, like, I don't know, I wouldn't call it necessarily an attractive energy on like a sexual level or whatever, but like there's definitely an energy where I'm like, I am attracted to you as a person for what you do. There are definitely some guys that I'm like, oh, I'm actually attracted for. Like, there are some people who are, they're just so good at acting that they're hot to me because they're really good at playing a role.
Like Sylvester Stallone.
I mean, not for me personally. I'm not going to yuck any yums, though.
God.
Do you have a Stallone costume in the closet for people who come over?
I don't know. I'd have to. I think I'd actually have to be shorter than I am to put on a Stallone costume.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I think you're right. Like, expressing skill is an attractive thing. I think there's just something specifically about dance that triggers my, like, the reptilian part of my brain, the oldest part, and the most sort of just like, you know, connected to all of my drives, if you will. That I'm just like, oh, damn. Okay. Yeah.
So Sylvester Stallone's 5'10". He is taller than I am.
So Sylvester Stallone. That's right. I forgot you're only like 5'8".
Yep.
You're a compact package.
Yeah.
Should we decide what we're doing for the episode?
Sure.
Do you want to do one today or two? I feel like we probably could get away with two. I mean, we've done two the last couple of weeks, and I almost maybe wouldn't want to get too far ahead.
Yeah, let's do one.
Okay. There was an email we got. I don't know if you've seen this. Here, I'll just read it to you. Thing is it's about a rune. So it's kind of like, what do we want to do with this? We could, like, see if there's a version of this that works for... Ah, shit. What is it called? I gotta look up the Discord now.
Johnny P. River Island.
Johnny P? It's not Dishgool. That's for fucking sure. We came up with some cool names for this shit.
Panasari?
Is it Panasari or Parasari? I think it might be Parasari.
Okay. Well, delete that then.
Parasari.
Delete Panasari.
Can I delete?
Yes.
Or maybe I do this. Official names. Parasari Tensitung. But this is, okay, so this was their email. Let's see, while listening to you guys talk about a rune, I began to wonder if Everast and a rune are aware of each other and if they've had any major conflicts slash wars that are common in epic fantasy. We kind of talked about the lack of contact there. I mean, we could talk about how Tensitung is in the middle of this. Spanning out this, I began to think about different major events on Everast and if a rune had to deal with them, specifically thinking about the fallout of the Ash Curse in the Sanguine Empire. It's been a long time since I've listened to the first couple of episodes, but I remember that the knowing races were left to the mercy of the world and creatures, the kind of Mad Max vibe you mentioned way back. And if that effect was amped up due to harsher environment of Orun, would it keep the same Mad Max vibe or something different, more dangerous? I mean, I'm getting total like Naya vibes.
I don't know what that is, Frank.
Oh, Carter. Shame. I'm joking. It's one of the shard realms in Magic. It's green, red, white. Basically like very energized life and stuff like that, but also there is some hierarchy in sense of like not civilization, but like honestly, I read it and I was like, oh, this is just fucking a rune.
Is that where the lion people are from?
Yeah, Ajani is from Naya.
I see. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I was thinking
like,
Ajani. Ajani and his friends.
If you Google Naya, I bet you get some good shit. Naya, well, nope.
What if I Google Sia? Will I get the same?
Naya is one of the five shards of Alara. Life, passion, and community are and the wild. These are what flourish without the influence of black or blue mana. In this lush land, life is celebrated and nature is revered. Naya is a glorious tropical jungle peopled with perfect specimens of the human, elven, leonin, and minotaur races. Naya boasts the most varied forms of life out of all of the shards. It seems like a paradise, but this is a deceptive view. Naya tremors with peril. Behemoths taller than buildings lumber through Naya's rainforest, crushing through acres of vegetation or civilization, casually underfoot. Yet somehow, Naya's sentient races revere these gargantuans, venerating them and ascribing them a sacred ineffability. Does this sound familiar to you? Because this sounds like fucking Orun meets like Illuvium or Ilvaru, as they would call it.
Yeah.
This is just the thing, is like you just run into the same flavors.
So, I mean, you know, our boys don't really worship the giant beasties.
No, I mean, in Ilvaru, well, the wild gods are literally this, but they just live in a different realm.
Exactly.
Because the wild gods are quite literally just these massive behemoth-sized, larger even than the behemoths that they talk about in Naya. Like, we're talking hundreds of feet tall.
At least seven,
yes. Sorry, I was in the middle of the email, though. I began to wonder if Orun was ever a focus of the Sanguine Empire, and or the Empire ever then began thinking if the Empire ever tried to expand their influence to the continent. I began thinking if during the Sanguine Empire, some knowing races fled to Orun, and they started up the first havens and holds. I've had some more thoughts that I should write down, but I figured some of this would be interesting to discuss. Basically, enjoy. I mean, I don't know, like, a lot of that stuff just has to do with the Sanguine Empire. I think it's kind of just a return to Orun episode, and I don't know if I really want to do that yet. But I was, like, trying to think if there's any version of that, because we've already kind of talked about a lot of that stuff as it would relate to Tencetung, Parasari.
Yeah. It sounds like a Return to Orun episode.
Yeah, so I think we'll just have to hold off on it. And but we just let them know, hey, like we still are looking forward to doing your email. It's not in the hopper at the moment. Okay, yeah. I mean, I don't know if you have any specific ideas of things that you wanted to do.
No.
Okay. So just to recap, we've talked about, the city, obviously. We talked about sort of a thousand years of stories, the fact that it's a treasure location, and then also specifically looked at like one treasure keeper type person, who's going to get this stuff. We talked about the tidelings, and we kind of went all over the place with our part one, part two episode. But we talked about the fact that it's sort of a nexus location, and it's the home of the lore keepers.
Yeah.
And the idea of sort of this eternal story. There were some notes that I wrote in the most recent one that were kind of interesting. Oh, the idea of there's like the islanders keeping track of cycles as the tidelings continue to come back, like which ones come back. That was kind of one of the things I was thinking of, is what if there were sort of, in the same way we've talked about archetypes, they're like seeing it as being like the same tidelings are returning, or maybe literally some of the same tidelings are returning because the characters are so sort of, archetypical. Anyways, yeah, we talked about that stuff. And then we went way out. We talked about the ley line spires and like what would make it unique. Going on in Parasari. We could talk for real about districts, just kind of continue and actually try and talk about districts, because that's what we were doing.
Candlemaker Square.
Yeah, Candlemaker Square, which is definitely canon.
Which isn't actually.
We can talk about, I don't know, like a mayoral position or something, or like who runs the city, or like is there a governing caste? We could talk about, like, I don't know. We kind of, I mean, we talked about one piece of culture, but, you know, we never really got into like too deep into food. You know, we talked about the pigs and stuff like that. We could explore the relationship to this mountain, you know, how tall this mountain is and like what might be up there. Are there any other fantastical creatures that are around, like dragons or, yeah, or something like that? I don't know. Anything like that that draws you? We could focus honestly on one building too, and like on you know, maybe the person who had it built and like a specific family or something. That could be kind of fun, like a merchant family or like some legislators, or I mean even something simpler than that, like a temple to a specific god. We could do a god mill where it's a specific temple at this one location where it's like not necessarily for everyone, but just for this one god, or not for, for the god everywhere in the world, but specifically as it's seen in Padasari.
That might be interesting.
We could also explore some of the different things that artifacts do. So like, for instance, one of the things I've written down here is golems, which was just from forever ago. I don't know if we ever really talked about golems and what they are, you know, versus like a construct or something. But we could sort of explore the role of, you know, like what artifacts have had a significant impact on Padasari. What, like, which ones do they keep? How do they decide which they keep? And like, are there some that are so powerful that they basically have defined, that they've like kind of warped the entirety of the landscape around them? You know, obviously there's that one where, you know, you can grow stuff underwater, specifically like have these bubbles of land. But like, are there others that kind of are doing similar things? Or, I mean, maybe this is the origin of the artifacts that go, like go into effect during Avum Senio or something. I don't know.
I think the you know, the leader or the governor or whatever the title is of Padasari, I'm thinking that they might have like an advisor in their court that is just a true AI golem. Is someone dredged up?
That's fun. I actually quite like that. You know what? Especially because they're an archivist and they keep, they've been tracking. You know what? It's handed down. It's like it's a position where like they actually recognize the individualism of that entity and they hand it down. We could talk about like the mayoral office and how that works, and you know, yeah, or like whatever you call the city ruler, and whether they're an elected official or inherited, etc. You know, because this is kind of more of a city state. And then also in addition to that, yes, this specific figure and like what their role is and Trevor, what their history is and stuff. Trevor. They make me think of Karn. It kind of makes me think of Karn.
Yeah, Karn, the guy that makes you put a silver token on one of the two things you draw, and then you have to, then you exile it. And then mm-hmm. you get to get it from exile.
I think he's the only generically colorless planeswalker, because he's made out of pure platinum.
Yeah.
Do you know the story behind him?
No.
What's his name?
Did he used to be blue and he got Eldrazi'd?
No. Who's the Mordenkainen guy? There's like Shurkans? A Mordenkainen equivalent. Not Shurkans. Or what? Maybe it's not Mordenkainen, but who's the other person in D&D lore that like travels the cosmos?
Elminster?
And stuff? Yeah, it's not Elminster.
Well, just think of the spells. Not Big B.
Well, I think it might be
Elminster.
I think it might be Mordenkainen.
Okay.
He's like the most great, powerful mage of all time. I think he might be from Greyhawk, and then like plane jumps.
That sounds like Mordenkainen.
Like Forgotten Realms. Greyhawk, most powerful wizard.
You're frozen.
Oh, am I?
Yeah.
If I stay frozen for a little bit, we'll restart.
You've been frozen for about 2 minutes.
Okay, then maybe we restart. I guess it might be Mordenkainen. I thought it was like, he's like true neutral. Here, let's end the call and restart.
Yeah.
Is that better?
Yes. So let's...
Okay.
True wizard. No, not true wizard.
True wizard. That's my alignment. I am true wizard.
And the greatest canon wizards.
I I mean, maybe it is Mordenkainen, but I thought it was somebody else. Most powerful D&D wizards.
And it looks like
characters ever.
Vecna. Mordenkainen is from Greyhawk. Elminster's from the Forgotten Realms. Many people are saying Rasslin, because at one point he was the only thing in the universe because he destroyed everything else.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's wow. Pretty OP.
Powerful, neutral, planeswalker, MTG. Oh, wait, you know what? I think if I just look up Karn, I should find that Karn was made by somebody, and that might be what I'm thinking of. Urza is who I was thinking of. I mean, on the other end. Urza was a planeswalker originating from Terasari or Terasare?
Terasari.
Best known for his millennia-long struggle with Yawgmoth and the plane of Phyrexia. He's sort of like a progenitor. He's there's not a lot of evidence of him anymore. He is consistently seen as like the most powerful figure in Magic the Gathering who was still mortal.
Even like more kind of than ascendant.
I think he battled what's his name? Starts with a B. Nicol Bolas. He battled Nicol Bolas and won. Okay. His last name does.
Bolas Nicol, my cousin.
The reason why he built Karn was because apparently the only thing that could time travel was platinum or something. And so he built a being of all platinum so that he could send it through time. And shit.
So why the fuck is Karn such a shithead then?
Is Karn a shithead? He's a pacifist. I thought you'd like that.
Well, I don't know. Whenever I play against him, I get frustrated. So that's why I imagine he's a shithead.
I see.
Because his
he's a gentle giant. His whole thing is basically that he like actually gets people in trouble sometimes because he refuses to harm anyone. Because I think he was built for destruction or something like that.
How he was. And he wants to define his own purpose. What a fucking existentialist. Jesus. This guy's
gonna
fucking sucking Sartre's cock.
A real drip.
Yeah.
No. We should I think we're talking about the mayoral office, yeah?
Yeah, is it a mayorship? Is it a governorship?
Or whatever that is, yes, I think we should.
I think they have a pope hat.
Yes, probably. I guess this is an even number, so that's you. It's whenever you're ready.
I have to pull up pope hat.
Pope hat.
Pope
hat. Pope hat. Pope hat.
The first picture is an Amazon thing. Just the best. You can own your very own Pope hat, Frank. There you go. You can enjoy that.
Oh, God. Who's this guy? Youngest Pope ever.
Yep. All right.